Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Open Minds Radio with your host Alejandro Rojas.
Hello, my friends, and welcome back to Open Mind Radio with your host, Alejandro Rojas. And guess what, people? I'm going to inform you about some cool changes that we are going to have going on. And that is that next week, starting on Friday, first of all, we're going to have our Thursday show next week, so no worries. The day after that, however, we're going to have our first show at the KFNX Studios, downtown Phoenix. So that's pretty cool. We're going to be on AM 11. Our show's now going to be Fridays at noon, every Friday at noon, AM 11, in the Phoenix metro area. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We'll be broadcasting out of their studios. And no worries, we're still going to have the live video stream with our live chat. You'll just see us in a new place instead of our lonely studio here. I'll be in a, you know, regular radio studio with many people around and engineer and stuff. I can see through the window instead of like today where I feel like I'm just alone in this giant room. But I know I'm not lonely because I have all of you wonderful listeners out there with me. We have a fun show today. The guest is Chuck Wade. Chuck Wade actually grew up in Roswell, and his father was a bartender. He owned a bar out there. So when the whole Roswell situation happened back in 1947, a lot of people went to the bar to drink. You know, if you had a UFO crash or dealt with maybe collecting some aliens, maybe that's what you would do too. And they told him lots of stories about stuff going on in that area. So growing up in the area, of course, he heard from lots of Roswell witnesses, and that's what got him into UFO research. And since then, he has actually continued his interest, and he's done a lot of investigation, including going out and looking for, you know, remnants and debris from the Roswell crash and others. He has his own theory about what happened at Roswell. He has some metal that he has been given or retrieved himself that he believes may be from a crashed UFO, and he has had some of those analyzed. He's going to talk about all of that with us here today, but that is after the news. So as usual, we've got UFOs in the news as the first section of our show today. Robbie Williams, we've talked a lot about this pop star. He's an English pop star, very popular in Europe. I didn't know who he was when I first heard his name, but now I do, although I still don't think I've heard any of his music. But regardless, I'm sure it's wonderful, and you listeners out there in Britain love him, I hear. He says he regrets opening up about his alien fascination. He kind of stopped doing music, started getting into paranormal, was going to UFO conferences. He then, not too long ago, talked about looking for some land in a UFO hotspot that's very out of the way so he can look for UFOs. And now the media hounds him about UFOs so much so that he says he regrets even talking about his kind of interest in this arena. So, poor guy, you know, just getting harassed like crazy about it. So, hopefully he is, really what he should just do is adopt it. You know, he should go talk to Shirley MacLaine and see how she deals with it, because those type of things usually don't go away. And now he is the UFO pop star. He should just come to conferences. He should be on my show and, you know, hang out with us UFO researchers. That's the best way to deal with it, Robbie. Other news, the balloon boy. Remember when the kid was in the balloon that looked like a flying saucer? His dad was part of this wife swap, where his dad was supposed to be the UFO researcher and wife swap or something like that. Anyway, those people got in trouble in Colorado, and they were finally sentenced, and they are doing some jail time. So unfortunately, Mr. and Mrs. Heen, the parents of the child, are going to have to do some prison time. I think the dad got something like 90 days in prison, and she got a few days with she's able to leave, but she's on parole. So they got in a lot of trouble for that, which is probably rightfully so. I mean, that was a scary situation. I remember, you know, I'm from Colorado, and I have friends in that area. And by the way, I never heard of this gentleman. I don't know that he's even attended any of the UFO meetings or things like that we did out there. But, you know, all of the emergency personnel in the area were, of course, very concerned, and they were afraid for this kid's life because that balloon was thousands of feet in the air, and that wasn't a very cool thing to do. And these people will learn why, beyond just it being bad to take emergency people away from their job, why you don't want to do something like that. In other news, Bigelow Aerospace, also known as BAS, they have made a contract with the FAA where they are now going to be the official reporting center for pilots on UFOs. Very interesting. BAS is the same organization which currently funds MUFON. In fact, I'm going to talk about this in a minute, but there's a STAR team that MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, has that is able to rapidly respond to UFO sightings and get out there and do investigations. And this group is funded by Bigelow and the BAS Corporation. So he has an interest in this field. In fact, prior to this, years ago, he had a group called NIDS. And this NIDS group was the National Institute for Discovery Sciences, and they were looking into paranormal situations. And they were actually writing reports on UFOs. They looked into the Dulce base and triangular objects that were seen, and written some reports. They had hired some scientists to look into these. For instance, with Dulce, they didn't find anything there. However, with the giant triangular aircraft, such as a famous picture that was taken out of Belgium in the early 90s, they did find that to be unexplainable, and they didn't believe it to be human technology. So, of course, they were back and forth like everyone else on some of these different phenomena. But they were very active in the field. Bigelow then got out of the field. He created his aerospace company. They had made a lot of ground, actually, in the space tourism field. They've got already a large object out there, this inflatable kind of space station that has a bunch of things floating around in it in orbit, including a blow-up alien that they put up out there. But that was their first test to kind of launch something into orbit, which was successful, and he's planning on doing more. He wants to be the first guy with a actual hotel in space that people can go visit. In the meantime, he has renewed his interest into the paranormal and UFOs, and now he has his group that is funding MUFON, and he is going to also receive UFO reports from pilots. Now, I haven't seen any reports coming out of Bigelow and his group recently regarding their findings along with MUFON. MUFON is posting their findings, and in fact, of course, with me working at MUFON, we have some connections there, and we've been able to write some stories, but I haven't seen anything come out of Bigelow, so hopefully they'll be putting together some comprehensive reports like they used to and get that out to the public so we can see some of what pilots are reporting and what they find in their investigation of these pilot reports. So hopefully that'll turn into some good stuff. So that was a good story. Another story a few different news sources are reporting on is about SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Of course, most of you know about this group. A gentleman by the name of Frank Drake works for this group. Jill Tarter, some other famous people. The movie Contact was made about SETI. And essentially, they take these huge radio telescopes and point them at the sky and send radio signals, hoping to speak to or find some extraterrestrial messages that way. They are in the belief that the extraterrestrials cannot traverse such vast distances as they would need to in order to visit Earth. And as physicist Michio Kaku told me once, well, they're astronomers and they're not physicists, so they need to brush up on their modern theoretical physics to see that actually we are theorizing that there are many ways to do that. However, interesting enough, they were cut off from federal funding years ago, but NASA and others have been talking about renewing that federal funding for better or worse. Of course, I think funding that what Bigelow is doing is going to be much more substantial and fruitful in the long run than what SETI's doing. In fact, they could fund us here at Open Minds and give us just a little bit of time, and we'll blow your minds, people, even if they don't fund us. Stick with us, and we'll blow your minds. Regardless, SETI might be getting another group of cash to keep them going. So for better or worse, otherwise out there, as usual, there are a lot of sightings. Again, there are some British sightings that have been posted on the web. Nothing too extremely exciting like the last couple weeks ago where there was a video over the Kremlin or some of these more exciting videos that have come out. Just kind of regular stories here and there about local newspapers with local sightings. You can go read all of this on the front page of openminds.tv. Remember, go to our website, and right on the front page under the daily UFO headlines, you're going to be able to see all of this, and you'll be able to keep up to date on the latest and greatest regarding what is going on in the world around UFOs, so you can see where people are seeing them, and that's essentially everywhere, my friends. They're reported all over the world on a regular basis. Another big story that will hopefully turn into something in this arena is Obama. He's been talking about declassifying documents, and there's a New York Times article around some new orders that the president has put out where he wants the agencies to review their declassification rules and regulations, and if possible, to please release more documents quicker. And unfortunately, it's kind of just a plea. Hey, guys, would you please, if you don't mind, when you get a chance, release more documents? It really isn't kind of this mandate that you will do this or that. So hopefully something will come of it, but we'll see. We'll have to keep an eye out. Of course, when Obama became president, a lot of people were excited because he had talked so much about transparency in government. However, at least so far, we haven't seen a whole lot that way. Really, the biggest thing we've seen in the last year or so have been the Clinton libraries opening up and releasing documents, or at least making them available. One great researcher out there, Grant Cameron, who runs presidentialufo.com, actually got a hold of me this week, and he was able to finally get some documentation saying he will receive some documentation. But he finally got a letter saying that he will receive some hundreds of pages from the Clinton libraries, possibly regarding UFOs, but he's not sure. It could be just some conversation with entertainment and artists and things like that. So we are hopeful. Grant Cameron is great at getting information out to the public. So as soon as those files get out there, we will take a look and we'll find out what we have, and hopefully we will have the next big story that indeed perhaps the Clintons did have dinner with extraterrestrials. That would be great. Other news, Open Minds exclusive story. You might have heard Antonio and I on Coast to Coast AM December 27th. That was last Sunday with George Knapp. We were on for the UFO year in review, and we also talked about a big case that Antonio worked on, which was a UFO over Argentina that was seen beaming a dam before a blackout. That was a really interesting story where a UFO was seen for nearly an hour over a city in Argentina. Many people saw it, reportedly almost maybe even half the city, and this is a city of around 10 to 20,000 people, so that would be a lot of people, in other words. The UFO then moved away from this town and moved to another town that had a reservoir near it. There were some sightings there. It moved over a reservoir. It was reported to be a large cigar-shaped object. Some fishermen in the reservoir next to the dam reported seeing this thing beam the reservoir or the dam, and then some sort of energy coming from the dam up to the craft, and then there was a blackout. The blackout lasted 12 hours, and the company who owned the dam said that one of the turbines was destroyed and possibly even partially melted. This is coming from some of the investigators out of Argentina. So luckily, because Antonio speaks Spanish and he keeps up on that stuff, he was able to catch his story, speak with one of the researchers down there, Maria Casas, or Mercedes Casas. I love that name, Mercedes. And he was able to figure out what was going on. He wrote a story on it that's on our website. And he also did a little with our executive producer for the TV, did a little news story on it that we have on YouTube and on the story itself. So go check that out at openminds.tv. Also, something we just posted today that does come from the STAR team, and this wasn't the one I talked about on Coast to Coast, but some of the MUFON people who were on there did talk about it. And this is a UFO in New York that buzzed a car, essentially, and caused some electromagnetic effects. So this gentleman in Port Jervis, kind of upstate New York, but not too far away from New York City, he was driving on some wooded kind of winding roads. He came around one corner, saw it yet again, another large cigar-shaped object. He thought it to be around 200 feet. It had some colored lights on it that were red, white, and blue. Very patriotic. I hadn't thought of that. The thing was rotating in the sky, and as it passed right over the witness, his car stopped. He freaked out. His windows wouldn't go down. His cell phone wasn't working. He was wondering if he should run or not. He opens his door and looks at the thing. The lights turn out, and his car came back on, and it wasn't like his car started up where he heard the starter. All of a sudden, it was running again. So he took off, tearing down the road to get home because he was terrified. He almost ran into a fence. When he got home, he looked for who to report this to. He didn't think the police would really care. He got a hold of MUFON, who sent out some investigators. And when they, during their investigation, used an EMF reader on the car, they measured some extremely strong electromagnetic fields. In fact, they pegged their tri-field that they were using, so they weren't able to measure exactly how strong because the thing was pegged. They were able to find another car that was similar make and model. It didn't have these effects. They then went back 20 days later to check to see if these effects had dissipated. Indeed, they had, but only by about 60%. And with a compass, they were able to measure the field to see where it was. and the fields were mainly emanating out of the front of the vehicle. So I asked Richard Lang, who was the lead investigator and who runs the STAR team, if they thought it was possibly because there's so much metal there at the engine, if that had any effect. And people are speculating that, but they're still not exactly sure what happened or why. So that's a really strange case. Of course, in Close Encounters, Richard Dreyfuss, his character, that happened to him where his car stopped. He also had received some radiation burns, which is like another MUFON case that we'll write about in our magazine that's coming out soon. So you're going to have to check out the magazine for the details on this one, people. But that used to happen where cars would stop when they were near UFOs. And hasn't happened a lot lately or been reported a lot lately. So it's interesting that it should happen in this case and then these electromagnetic effects being measured. So really interesting case. And we have a lot of other cool stuff. Another story by Antonio on Ronald Reagan and his sightings. We have an alien autopsy endgame story with some exclusive information from Philip Mantle. That is, we're pretty much putting this whole thing to rest, I think, on the autopsy, that it was indeed seemingly to have been faked, unfortunately. We have a story from Richard Dolan about some government documents. So, and then we have Maurizio's epic story of the alien autopsy and his experience as he tried to investigate these autopsy footage back in Italy. So really interesting stuff. Check it out, openminds.tv. However, ladies and gentlemen, it is a time you have been waiting for. Let us bring on Mr. Chuck Wade. He is actually in Albuquerque now. Not in studio, although he's come and visited our studios. That was a great visit. If you're watching the live video stream, you'll see some pictures of Chuck during his visit to our studios. That is Chuck's phone ringing. There it goes again. D. Chuck Wade.
Chuck Wade speaking.
Hey, Chuck, it's Alejandro.
Oh, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Having a good New Year's Eve?
Yes, we did. We had a nice party last night at a group, and we had a great time.
Good. So
tonight we're going to stay in.
Stay in? Yeah, probably a good idea. So how was your year?
Some good. Mostly good. There's some bad things, but overall, though, this is an exciting year on the alternative energy part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a couple items that are just phenomenal. The UFO had several laboratories take the metal, and it's the metal that I have from the UFO crash that on the plane to San Augustine there here in New Mexico in 1947. It's all the way to Hong Kong and both coasts, Midwest. It's just scattered all over now, being analyzed.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I want to get more into more detail on all of those pieces you have and that analysis. But I do want to kind of take a piece at a time, and also just kind of go back to how you originally got involved with all of this. And essentially, it started for you when you were a child, right?
That is correct. I was born and raised in the little town of Corona, New Mexico. And Corona is not known so much for the UFO, but that's actually about 25, 30 miles to the southeast of Corona. It's where the UFO that is known as the Roswell crash, that's where it actually happened, closer to Corona.
Mm-hmm.
And the fellow that found it, Mr. Mac Brazel, he was the foreman of the Foster Ranch out there. And whenever he found that crash, he came to Corona to get my father, Jesse Wade, to go out to see what had crashed out there, because Mac just flat didn't know. Unfortunately, Dad didn't go with Mac, but he always wished he had him.
Why didn't he go with him? Did he think he was nuts?
Oh, I don't think that at all. Well, it was right after the war, and I don't believe Dad had much of a car in those days because we got a car. It's my recollection in December of 47.
Mm.
So we didn't have much at all in those days. But, Dad was there by himself. He owned and operated the bar, and he had nobody to turn it over to. So
he was just too busy. I found just kind of an interesting side note recently that Mac Brazel's uncle was the guy who killed Pat Garrett.
And Dad had that gun in his bar there for many, many years. It was on the back of the bar.
Oh, really? He had that?
Yes, for many years.
The gun. So that was a true story that you knew about?
Very much so.
What happened? How did he end up killing him?
They came and got it. I don't know who they were, but I know that Dad relinquished it upon their request. But it was I remember distinctly it being back there hanging up on the back bar.
Wow, interesting.
But Dad had basically a museum in the bar. He had a tremendous arrowhead collection.
Wow.
And then he had guns. He just started one and two, and then he wound up guns hanging from the ceilings. And so he had guns everywhere.
Wow. Wow, and it's incredible to think that he could have gone out and seen the crash debris that Mac Brazel found.
It would have been great, but unfortunately he didn't.
Mm-hmm. So,
but also, after Mac didn't get Dad to go out, he went up to the drugstore and tried to get Archie and Geraldine Perkins to go out and to there, especially Archie. And Archie didn't go also out there, but Geraldine Perkins assisted Mac on making a phone call to Roswell and to report it over there. So, and Geraldine has told me that twice in front of her daughter, Cheryl, about making the phone call for Mac Brazel.
And the Perkins were family friends?
Well, they lived there in Corona, and Corona's such a small town, everybody was a friend.
Mm.
But they've been there for many, many years, and the son, the Perkin boy, is still there, Ran.
Okay, so they remember when this all happened.
Very well.
Does Geraldine Perkins talk about seeing any of the material or anything?
She never told me about it, and unfortunately she passed away a couple years ago.
Mm.
But she never mentioned at all seeing the metal. But I have talked, my mother and I went out and talked to Loretta Proctor, who is a neighbor to the Foster Ranch and knew Mac Brazel very well. And my mother and I went out, must have been around 1987. His mother passed away in 89 and shortly before that. So my mother and I went out to see Loretta, and Loretta and mother were friends from childhood. And Loretta told Mother and I about when Mac Brazel brought this material over to their house, and Floyd Proctor tried to cut it with his knife, and it wouldn't cut. He tried to burn it with matches, and it wouldn't burn, and it was really strange. But Loretta told my mother and I that in person.
Oh, so she had seen the material.
She had seen it.
Wow.
Definitely, right there in her house.
So there are more people who had seen it.
I feel sure. And then also in the book, The Roswell Incident, it mentions that Bill Brazel had parts of that craft in the, well, they called it the tavern there in Corona.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was my dad's bar because there's only one bar in town. And Bill had parts of this craft in there at my dad's bar, and a couple of days later, someone came out to the ranch and retrieved those parts and pieces from Bill.
Did your dad, was it like housed in your dad's bar, or was it
No, he just had it in there.
He brought it by?
Possibly a cigar box or a shoe box or something.
Okay. Yeah.
And he just wanted to show people what he had found.
Okay.
So whenever I read that in the book, it was probably around 1981. Well, I've known Bill basically all my life, and he lived over in Capitan, so I just called him up. And he wanted to know how Mother was, because my dad had just passed away a couple years prior. And then I read from the book, quoted right out of the book there, about him having these parts and pieces in Dad's bar there. And I asked him point blank, Bill, is this true? And he said yes. That was probably 1981. So for the last 28, 29 years, I have been on a quest to know what happened out there on the Foster Ranch in 1947.
And who took these pieces from him?
Well, it was the military. They showed up in a staff car, and they were very insistent that they take the parts and pieces, and they took them.
Did he describe the pieces to you?
What? No, he did not. No. They're described a little bit in the book, but we didn't go into details like that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So were there other incidents or clues to what had happened or maybe confessions that happened to your father or in the bar?
Not there, but several years ago, one of the UFO books came out that has a Robert Porter's name in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading that book, and Robert Porter came by, and I've known Robert all my life. And he saw what I was reading. He said, my name is mentioned out in that book.
Hmm.
And he signed his name by his name in the book. And I don't have it right offhand. I've got it here, but I don't know which one it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably 15 years ago. But he was the fellow that's mentioned in the book, that he was there in the hangar whenever they were loading that airplane out, and he saw some of that metal. So there's another fellow that saw it personally that I've talked to.
Mm-hmm. So you talked to him personally, and he was at the Roswell airfield when they were shipping it out?
That is correct.
Okay. Wow. Interesting. So,
and coincidentally, Robert Porter and Loretta Proctor are brother and sister.
No, really? Okay. So that family had a lot to do with this case.
Yeah.
That's what's interesting. There are so many of these witnesses and people around town. Edgar Mitchell says he grew up in Roswell and had a lot of people tell him. But you don't hear about all these other witnesses out there.
Yes, I certainly wish they would come forward.
Mm-hmm. Is it that they don't want to talk about it?
I couldn't speak for them at all.
Okay, yeah.
But maybe 2 years ago I was. You, in fact, you might have been in Roswell. Remember, Earl Fuford came forward and said that he was the forklift driver that hauled that big box from the warehouse out to the plane, and that he had also been up to one of the crash sites and picked up parts and pieces. Do you recall him?
Was he there in Roswell last year during the festival?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember because
his
son had shown us some of the pictures.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
And
not pictures of the debris, unfortunately, but pictures of people at the airbase.
Correct. And also, it's very important, though, what Earl told...
Did he talk to Don Schmidt or
Bill Burns?
Okay.
On the UFO Hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that segment where?
No, I didn't actually.
Mr. Fuford is telling Bill Burns about before the UFO crashes there by Roswell, that there were three UFOs that came over the hangar that he was working at, and that's very important. There were three UFOs before Roswell crashed.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was not just one crash there by Corona. There were three crashes there by Roswell. The Corona, the one 53 miles west of Roswell on the side of the Capitan Mountain, and then there's another crash 40 miles north of Roswell. And there's evidence for each of this. The one west of Roswell, Jim Ragsdale has written a affidavit saying that he was there, and then there's also a DVD that I'm holding in my hand called Roswell, The Naked Truth About the 1947 UFO Crash at Roswell. And this DVD was made, well, actually a film in that day. Jim was telling his daughter what happened whenever he and his girlfriend physically saw that craft come and crash on the side of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim's son-in-law was filming it. And Jim passed away about 5 days later than that. That is a compelling piece of information to me that crash is real.
Mm-hmm. On the west side.
And I've been to that site, and you can physically see where that big craft knocked those big trees down. whenever I was there, maybe 10 years ago, the stumps were still there. The trees had long since, but the stumps was there, and the valley, let's call it, a valley of the trees,
mm-hmm.
was still there. So you could look out from those big boulders where the craft had crashed, look right out, and you could practically see the Foster Ranch there. So that's two that crashed.
Okay.
And then the third one is mentioned in Colonel Corso's book, The Day After Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
Colonel Corso had parts and pieces of that craft in the Pentagon. And Corso said that those pieces came from the crash north of Roswell. And then whenever Walter Haupt in 02 signed an affidavit saying that he was involved in the crash north of Roswell, and that affidavit was released a couple years ago, and you can easily find it on the internet.
Right.
And he said it was north mm-hmm. of Roswell. So that's three right there.
Yeah. So Walter Haupt was the PR officer at the base. He was actually the guy who sent out the famous press release that hit the news about the Air Force finding a flying disc. And then he also sent out the retort, which was that it was a weather balloon, right?
I don't know that he mentioned that. I know in his affidavit he told that Colonel Blanchard had dictated that press release to him. You know,
yeah,
it wasn't a loose cannon just doing it.
Mm-hmm.
He said, but he also in his affidavit says why they put that out. The
right.
press release saying that they had found a UFO. Why they put that out is to cover up the crash north of Roswell. Because the one north of Roswell was found by civilians, reported to the military base. The military people came out and retrieved that little UFO. It was about 12 by 15 foot length, not quite as wide, and 6 foot tall. That's what he said in the affidavit. So what they actually is doing, knowing that the craft that crashed next to Corona was in the sheriff knew about it, people knew about it, the ranchers around there knew about it, so that was already in the news.
Mm-hmm.
What they didn't want to know, the people to know, is that little bitty one over there by Roswell was basically intact, and the bodies were still inside. There's four bodies inside.
Mm-hmm.
And the government did not want that to be leaked out.
Mm-hmm.
That was the reason they put that article in the paper.
Yeah, Walter Haupt said
at all.
That there were two sites that they released information about, one site to keep people away from the second site, which was the site that was more important, where they retrieved the bodies. And he said he even saw the bodies in this
that
affidavit.
That is correct. And, yeah, and it was about 4 foot high and big-headed, just like normal. We hear about the little grays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that memo is interesting. And another interesting side note is he stayed in Roswell, and him. Now, was it him and his daughter, or just his daughter who started up the Roswell Museum?
No, it wasn't his daughter. It was Glenn Dennis, the mortician.
Okay.
The daughter came later.
Okay.
Julie is now the director of the museum.
So, yeah, his daughter's now the director, but didn't start it up.
But she did start it. I'm reasonably sure of that.
Okay, right. Okay, yeah, that's good.
Glenn and Walter did mm-hmm. did start it.
So with there being three different sites, I know the site you talk about is a San Augustine site. Which one of those is that?
It's what? Which one?
San Augustine, or is that separate?
That's
from?
That's the fourth one.
Oh, a fourth one.
Yeah, these are the ones I'm talking about now are by Roswell.
Uh-huh.
The fourth site is over by west of Socorro, which is a couple hundred miles to the west of Roswell.
Mm-hmm. Now, was that this site, another UFO crash, right? And then was it at the same time?
I'm going to put a date to it on the 2nd of July, 1947.
Okay.
The night of the 2nd. Why I say that, one of the witnesses to the site, Mr. Barney Barnett, his wife Ruth made a diary entry of every day of their marriage. And she said on the second that he was there on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he was physically at the site and was ran off by the military.
Okay.
But the one that, these other three, the one at Corona, the one north of Roswell, and the one west of Roswell, they all came down on the night of the 4th of July.
What's your theory as to why all of a sudden, you know, four UFOs crashed during this period of time?
My theory is, and I've got a lot of reasons to think of, I'm very close to correct, but this is a theory. The Roswell incident happened only 2 weeks after the, I just lost the name, the fellow up in Oregon, Kenneth Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
Kenneth Arnold saw those 8 UFOs going very fast up there by Mount Rainier.
Mm-hmm.
Well, somebody somewhere made the decision they want to know what those little fellows were doing, because there's lots and lots of information, local information about UFOs. I've got probably 100 reports before Roswell, but they was all local. But here came Kenneth Arnold, and that made national news. So somebody made the decision, let's bring some of those down, or one of them down, and see what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So how they brought them down is, let's start back over in Los Alamos, roughly 1940. Whenever they were putting in Los Alamos, they also put in 3 very high-powered radars to guard the skies over Los Alamos. One of these radars was up by El Vado, which is close to Taos, one over close to Gallup, where I live, and the third one was in Moerity. And Moerity's radar was mobile. So what I think they did, they took the mobile unit from Moerity and took it over onto the plains of St. Augustine, because somebody over time had said that there was a UFO just hanging out on the plains.
Hmm.
And I'd like to describe the plains of why that radar had to be inside of that, inside of the bowl of the plains of St. Augustine.
Okay.
The mountains around the plains are very, very tall, and they're nearly continuous around it. It makes a big bowl, roughly 50 miles by, let's say, 30 miles. So between 1,000 and 1,500 miles of lake bed there. And in the old days, whenever the whole thing had filled up with water, and over time, there was water leaked out, and pretty soon there was a river running out of that area. So now it's dry lake bed. But these high mountains, in order to see ground with radar, which you'd have to have small radar units to triangulate of where anything that fell out of the ground, out of the sky to ground, would have to be inside of that bowl. And why I say that it was inside of the bowl is, there was some archaeologists doing work at Bat Cave inside of that area there. It's a very ancient archaeological site. And there's reason to believe that they physically saw what they thought was a meteor come down. But the next morning, whenever they got up, they looked across the plains, and they saw the shiny stuff over there. So they came across the plains and were there at the site. Then also a Mr. Barney Barnett, who worked for the Water Conservation Service there, in that area, he saw the craft gleaming, so he came up. And then also there was a group from Albuquerque, a father and a brother and a son. There's 5 people. And one of these people was a Mr. Gerald Anderson. He was 5 years old at that time. And he and his family were there. So there's 3 different people there. And then what would happen is, the blasted military showed up and ran them off. Now, I want to know, how could the possibility of the military knowing where that craft crashed, if they didn't have radars inside of that big bowl to triangulate the ground? And they wasn't just a few military. I spoke personally to Gerald Anderson, and he said whenever the military took him out to the main highway there, which was dirt in those days, he said they had a crane, flatbed trucks, trucks with fuel in it, and they had a lot of people. So they were prepared to bring down and retrieve a UFO inside of the plains of San Augustine.
What did Gerald see? Did he see the craft itself? Gerald Anderson?
No, they were in the Albuquerque the night before.
Mm-hmm.
They came to the plains that morning, and this happened before noon.
Okay.
And whenever the military come. And this year in October, for the last 8 years or 7 years, I've had a UFO film festival here in Gallup. This year, we had our film festival on October the 24th, and Mr. Gerald Anderson was our speaker.
Mm-hmm.
It was what a treat. Mr. Anderson stood on stage for more than an hour and told us what happened whenever he and his family were just looking around there for agates. Then they came across this craft, and then here came the military. And he said he remembers very distinctly standing under the craft, feeling the craft, and it felt cold. There was one alien that was still alive, but the person or the one next to him there most likely was deceased. But Gerald describes very well of how that alien reacted to them and then also to the military. It's fabulous. I encourage people to hear
Wow.
Gerald Anderson speak of this.
What did he describe the craft looking like?
He said it was round, about 25 foot in diameter, and it's sort of wedged on the side of a hill there, and he was able to go under it. And there was also a major crack in it. And from out of this crack, his cousin was actually got up into the and looked into the crack. Gerald could see it from the ground, but he never got into it. But one thing that I think is important, what was also there, Gerald said there was a lot of fibers coming out of that crack, and for many years he was wondering where that horse's tail came from. But it turns out we're reasonably sure that horse's tail is just a bunch of optical fibers that was hanging out of that crack. Also, he said that what he could see was some instruments, must have been the backside of the instruments, that had a double hole on it. And inside of these, in the back of these instruments, had all kinds of lights going on and off.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing was still operational in a sense.
Mm.
It was definitely wounded, but not totally destroyed.
And just to clarify, by horse's tail, you mean all the fibers that were coming out of it looked like a horse's tail, and he couldn't figure out what
correct.
That was.
Yeah, it was the looks of a horse's
mm-hmm.
tail. And at that time, they'd have no idea what fiber optics was.
Wow. Did he describe
I think
what
that is very, very important on the
yeah.
propulsion system of the UFO.
Did he describe what the creature looked like?
He did in detail. He said they had a big head, sort of almond black eyes, small bodies, really thin, and he thought they was about 4 feet tall.
Mm-hmm. And one of them he said was alive.
Yeah, one of them definitely alive, not hurt per se.
Was it moving or
most likely was dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were two more that he didn't see, but there were four aliens in that craft.
Mm-hmm. Where does that information come from that there were four?
I don't know for sure.
Okay.
But I've heard that from several different sources, so I'm going to say it's true.
Okay.
But he did not say that, I'm reasonably sure.
And then the one that was alive, was it moving or did it try to communicate with him? Wow.
Yes. And one of the fellows there was a linguist. He just tried a whole lot of languages on that creature, and nothing fazed him at all. There's none. Oh, Gerald was, say 5 years old, and then he got kind of close to that creature. The creature looked him in the eye, and he felt that he had a lot of telepathy put into him.
Hmm.
I remember very well what Gerald was saying, how unusual that felt.
That he had some kind of download of information?
Yeah, he had download of information.
Does he remember what that information was?
I I don't remember if he's saying what it was.
Okay.
But I feel that he did say something about it.
Mm-hmm.
We taped that his talk, but I've not seen the tape yet, but I will shortly.
Okay.
Being edited. But, yes, and I really and truly hope that other people can hear Mr. Anderson. He's a very articulate, enjoyable speaker, and it's just phenomenal to speak with somebody and hear someone that physically saw and touched the UFO, saw and touched an alien. He touched that dead alien.
Mm-hmm.
At times when he didn't think it was real when he first touched it because he was small.
Wow, what did he say that texture felt like?
It felt cold. And then after just a moment, he realized that's a person, not a doll.
Mm-hmm. So Barney Barnett, the other witness, were you able to speak with him as well?
No, he passed away many years ago.
Okay.
But there's people that were friends of his that have talked, and talked to Stan Friedman and others.
Mm-hmm.
So there's... not first-hand, but second-hand information from Barney Barnett.
And do you remember how he came across the craft or how he found it?
Barney?
Yeah.
Yes, he was out. There's a main road, which is, once again, was dirt then, but it's better than the dirt road that's out in the plains itself and the old dry lake bed. So he's going from one ranch to the other ranch via the back roads out on the dirt out there, rather than going up to the highway and around. He's just going from one ranch to the other,
mm-hmm.
the shortcut, and happened to see it out there and came over. And he reported it to his boss, and the boss thought he's crazy, and well, they didn't talk much, but Barney and some of his friends, I think Mr. Malta, they spoke some of about it.
Mm-hmm. So, and then you now have been able to be privy or work with some physical evidence from this area?
Yes, I physically have it, and I have it in my hand as I'm speaking.
Okay, and this is some...
And how that happened is Mr. Art Campbell from the state of Oregon, a number of years ago, was coming across New Mexico, and he's reading the book, The Roswell Incident. And he decided, well, they had some time, so they felt they'd just go over by the plains of San Augustine and see if they could find it.
Mm-hmm.
And they got hooked on looking for it, and they looked for a number of years. And a few years back then, he actually found it. And just he and his wife, who never did any digging there. And then in 04, Art was a speaker at the conference, and, well, they call it a symposium in Aztec, New Mexico. And Mr. Campbell had some parts and pieces that he showed from stage about what he had found there. He showed this metal, and he showed a little alien shoe that's only 4 7/8 inches long, but it's 1 1/8 wide, and it's made out of 9 layers. 7 layers of cloth and 2 waterproofers. And this can all be seen in Art's book, UFO Crash at San Augustine. And then also, he had a kind of a funny-looking thing there that had gotten really hot. And it was made out of plastic, and it came squishing down. But they had an MRI of it and unsquished it. Got it up, and it's about 6 or 7 inches high. It's basically a triangle, and what we think it is an alien artificial heart, because there are microscopic gold, copper, and silver wire inside of this object. And it's really neat to see, and I wish somebody would really take an interest and find that out.
And this is something that he has.
Yeah, he has it. I've actually held it in my hand.
Okay. Wow, and he thinks it's an artificial heart.
And why I think that is, Art was a speaker in Roswell 2 years ago, and he was telling me that he had recently received some pictures that had been declassified as UFO autopsies, of the alien autopsies.
Mm-hmm.
And right here where we have a round heart, in these pictures, it's showed very clearly a triangular heart in the center.
Hmm.
And that would just absolutely fit the triangular heart that Art has.
Were you able to see those pictures as well?
I didn't see the pictures themselves, but he told me about it, and I could easily get some.
Mm-hmm.
I will ask Art to where he got them.
Oh, okay, so you're still in contact with him.
Oh, definitely. He's gave me a great big kudos on this radio show.
Oh, great.
So I predict Art Campbell is listening as we speak.
You know, I think that if I remember correctly, I thought he moved to New Mexico.
No, definitely did not.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think when I lived in Denver, someone had said he was friends with Art Campbell, and I was actually going to try to get him to speak in Denver, but I lost contact with that person.
No, I've never heard him mentioned at all. He's well-established. He's retired. He's some years older than I am. I'm just turned 70. So I don't think he is. But anyway, there's another item that Hart has several pieces of, and I personally found a piece, but I've lost it.
Uh-oh.
So it's out there someplace, as wax. And this wax, whenever you first see it, it looks like pottery shards. But then you pick it up, it's really crazed on one side and flat on the other. And this wax is made out of plant-derived wax, not oil-based wax. And same with the waterproofings on that little shoe sole, or shoe, was plant-derived waterproofing, not oil-based.
Hmm.
So I think that's interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. So what pieces do you have yourself?
I have a number of foils,
mm-hmm.
but the foil that I have is not like the foils that are described by the Corona site that wads up and it unfolds itself.
Mm-hmm.
I have foil that's all the way from less than 20 microns thick to 65 microns, and a sheet of paper is roughly 20 microns area.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got stuff that's thinner than a sheet of paper at three times as thick. And I've got one of them here. It's about 5 inches wide by 8 inches tall, and it's doubled over like a taco shell.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really crooked, but somebody has really taken time to make this thing very, very wrinkled, but it's basically flat. But also something that is really, really unusual. All the edges of every piece that I have, the big pieces, have about an eighth to 3/16 of the outside edge turned over itself and flattened.
Hmm.
So there's no raw edges on these pieces of metal, these pieces of foil. So each one of these coils, the big ones, not the little ones, they're blown out, but these bigger pieces were made as pieces, not torn as pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? They mm-hmm. have this outside edge turned
yeah.
on itself
mm-hmm.
where it's not a raw edge sticking out.
So it wasn't something
ripped. One thing is whenever they use that fiber optics from that horse's tail,
mm-hmm.
they attach to this piece of metal, and then it energizes somehow or another, and rather than the energy going out the end, it's doubled back on itself.
Hmm.
And I think that has a lot to do with the propulsion system of the UFO, as these pieces of metal.
Now, have you had those pieces analyzed?
Some, but there's quite a number of labs now looking at it. But I had one at New Mexico Tech, and he took a cross-section of six of these pieces of,
mm-hmm.
of metal. Weights 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 are all foils, like I say, from less than 20 microns to 65. And then weight 6 is much, much heavier. And we think it's part of the outside of the ship because it's about 1,500 microns. And that's equal to about 1/16 of an inch. So this stuff is really thin.
Mm-hmm.
But this outside piece has got a inside core of about 1,400 microns. And whenever you look at it in cross-section, there is just an absolute blizzard of iron particles in it. Just gobs of iron. But But then whenever you get to the outside, it's got a cladding, like they put about a 50 micron cladding on it,
mm-hmm.
and there's almost no iron, but a whole lot of silicon.
Hmm.
And the silicon would make it hard, but if there's iron, it would rust, so there's no iron. So that's why we think it's the outside of the ship.
Hmm. And these iron particles.
Hard. Iron particles.
What are they? Is it just our iron particles, or are they embedded in some other type of metal?
No, it's embedded in aluminum.
Aluminum.
It was molten aluminum, and then they put these particles, not a liquid, but a particle, into that molten aluminum, and they're scattered evenly from one side to the other.
Mm-hmm.
So it had to have been made, absolutely had to have been made in zero gravity, because if you put an iron particle in a liquid aluminum, it would have went by gravity to the bottom, or start mm-hmm. to the bottom. This foil, none of these foils can you tell at all where the top or bottom was. It's distributed equally from side to side.
And that analysis... go ahead.
That's the same with all these other pieces hmm. except 6. 1, 2, 5 has got iron particles, but they're fairly good sized. One of them's about like 4 microns, which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that was doing the electron microscope, he's calling that a boulder. But maybe you have a boulder of iron out in this liquid aluminum, it would have just immediately went to bottom. Well, it's not. It's suspended.
So the people who did the analysis, what did they have to say about it?
Well, all they did was do the analysis. They wouldn't say.
Uh-huh.
No one will say.
Did they express any opinion?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I've never seen nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he had actually physically worked for Alcoa Aluminum.
Okay.
And then whenever you go to the Internet, you can ask questions to Alcoa Aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wrote, it turns out the girl's name is Lynn. And we've corresponded with Lynn for quite a while, and for sure she had never seen nothing like it, Alcoa or anybody she's ever known, because she got her Ph.D. in foils. So she had studied foils. She knew foils inside and out, and she'd never seen nothing like this.
Wow.
But she also couldn't tell me where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
She also absolutely could not tell me how it was made.
Hmm.
So anybody that's got a Ph.D. in foil, they have no idea. She thought that it might be made this way, but she didn't know.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting is the other people who have received pieces, and I really want to write a story on this, and one time I will, but the other people who have pieces of metal that they think came from... a UFO, it often turns out to be an aluminum and a silica.
They've never seen anything like it, I'll guarantee you that. None
right.
of them has come back saying, except for two people, and I'd like to avoid talking about those two people right now.
Okay.
But go to my website, Chuck Wade, UFOReport.com.
Mm-hmm.
I have one report that one of the scientists brought in. And it's 47 pages long of beautiful pictures of the nano sizes and smaller, I do believe.
What was the name of the website again?
It's Chuck Wade, UFOReport.com.
Okay.
And there's 47 pages of colored pictures of microscopic stuff. And this is only from 2 pieces. That same scientist has 11 pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got a long ways to go, and he's looking forward to doing them. He's never seen anything like this, I'm sure of that.
Yeah.
He's really intrigued on what he's finding. And, people keep asking about the atomic ratios and all that. Well, I don't know much about the atomic ratios myself, but there's one piece of iron in there that he's really... really looking at. It's not normal, but he doesn't have a big enough piece to really make it definitively not normal.
That the piece of iron is something that isn't normal?
Yeah, it's not the normal ratio, but he won't come to conclusions because it's so small.
Hmm.
So what he's going to do is continue looking at the iron to see if he can definitively say that this thing doesn't meet the U.S., I mean, the world, this Earth atomic ratio.
Wow, very interesting.
But he's had this since March, these pieces. So this is, what, 9 months later, and he's still working on it? If it had been just ordinary kitchen aluminum foil, he would have sent it back in March. This is December, and he still hasn't sent it back.
Well, and I've got to have a chance to look at it, and it's certainly not normal aluminum. I mean, it's really hard. It's pretty strange material.
Yeah, and they're all, I'm wondering, whenever they get down to the nano-sized particles, I'm wondering if the thickness will have something to do with what they, what's in there. They couldn't test it, but if they had it different thicknesses, then they could put whatever they wanted, having these nanoparticles here or the other type nanoparticle over there. Because I think that the nanoparticles that are, that we're going to find, we haven't found any yet that I know of, but I think we're going to find nano-sized particles in this foil that is going to become the propulsion system of UFOs. Because these little particles, whatever they are and whatever they're made out of, they're going to have a frequency put to that particle, that nano-sized particle, and it's going to vibrate, and it's going to catch into another stream of energy that we have chosen or don't even know about. But that other stream of energy is going to propel this propulsion, propel this thing very, very well.
That would
There's
be neat.
There's a whole system of physics that's in the physics books wrong, and I think intentionally wrong where it doesn't work, that that shows how this whole system works. But the premise in the physics books is wrong.
So with these other crashers, the Corona, I'm calling them, let's see, the Corona, the one west, which is Jim's Ragsdale, and the Corso one that's north, were there materials that you know of that were retrieved from any of those sites?
According to their affidavits, all three of those sites had it. Well, first off, there at Corona, we know there's truckloads of foils taken away. Truckloads. So there's a big craft of some sort. The Jim Ragsdale, in his affidavit, said that he and his girlfriend had picked up two gunny sacks full of foils before the military came. And then in Walter Haas' affidavit, it said there was foils. So, yes, there was foils on all four of those crafts. One we physically have parts of, the foils, and then Corona, Lots, Jim Ragsdale, two gunny sacks, and Walter Haas' North foils. Yes, there's foils on all of them. My question to you and the audience is, why was that foil on these crafts? Lots of foil.
Yeah, that's the big question. And hopefully, like you've talked about, you'll be able to discover that when you touch the, or when they figure out what the heck these things were used for. And that's what I think is interesting, is talking to some people about these sort of things, because the iron particles are something that's found around cattle mutilations and crop circles. And like I said before, there are people who believe they've found pieces of possible UFO that they're made up of an aluminum silicate. So there's starting to be a trend here. And a lot of people will ask, you know, wouldn't it be an extraterrestrial material if it was from outer space? But a lot of space is made out of the same stuff.
Well, it may be out of the same stuff, but it's not put together correctly.
Right, it's put together differently.
People. I'd like to take this as a warning. On two occasions now, I've had this metal wind up at, let's put it back to one. The other person that is a scientist, but I'm one very specific place. A person sent samples of this foil to Seals Laboratory out in California, and Seals Laboratory came back and said all this is aluminum foil with silicon from the soil on it. Folks, that's an absolute lie. What this is, what Seals Laboratory does, they only look at the side of the foil. They don't look at the cross-section of foils. Says right in the literature, they don't do cross sections. I've tried for now 3 years to try to get this person that had Seals Laboratory do their test to reanalyze it. Nothing. I think that is, well, I won't say what I'm taking, but I think that anybody would send me a report that's wrong and won't have it corrected. There's something wrong, and I think it's wrong.
Yeah.
Now, Seals Laboratory, if any of you felt your materials to Seals Laboratory foiled,
beware.
And they'll come back and says it's regular foil with silicon from the sand, I've got two reports from there now. Or two reports like that. One of them for sure from Seals. The other one I think was from Seals.
Gotcha.
Same quotation. But anyway, have somebody other than Seals do it. Have it looked at cross-section, and you'll find out what's in there. It's really, really interesting. And the reason I'm put up my website is so that people will have a place to go to look at these foils, and they can do research on it without wondering. And there must be at least a dozen laboratories have told me that they will put their results on my website. So far, I've only got one. But I'll tell you what, once we get somebody that'll say it's extraterrestrial, I think we're going to have a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah.
But getting that first one is tough.
Yeah. So it's real. Now, how much metal have you have? I know you've got more than just these pieces, I believe, right?
That is correct. I've got well over a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
Six of them are fairly good sized in the inches. The rest of them are rather small. Mr. Campbell has considerably more metal than I do. I've never seen other than just a few pieces. But we have several pieces total.
And he was able to go out to the site to find this stuff?
He found it.
Uh-huh.
And then also in 04, after his talk here in Aztec, I made an arrangement with him, and we made an arrangement to go down there in May of 04, and I hired four Navajo boys that was just tremendous workers. And we knew where Mr. Campbell had found his pieces, so I made four tripods with 12-foot legs and 2-foot by 3-foot baskets so we could screen dirt. And we screened dirt for 2 days, and we found an awful lot of dirt, but we didn't find many pieces of UFO, but we ruled out because we don't know exactly what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
So there towards the end of the, while we were going to be there, we set up a tripod over where Mr. Campbell had found his pieces. We found pieces immediately. So we know exactly where this thing landed. And then also in 05, we went back, not a very big crew, and we found more pieces. So we can find pieces any day we want them.
Wow.
But I don't want to just find pieces because we don't have any idea how many pieces are there.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd love to have is a documentary team there to put in a documentary with all the rules of custody and all our chain of custody. Well, anyway, we didn't have any of that. We got a camera and we've got the stuff, but we don't have anything that would stand up in court or nowhere. So it has to be done correctly.
Gotcha. So, also, isn't there a sort of the name, for some reason, I've been the whole show, I've been trying to figure out what it's called, and I can't remember, where you can analyze a piece of metal to see the alignment of the atoms in relation to the magnetic field, where you can tell if it was made off planet?
I have absolutely no idea.
There is one, and I can't remember.
I'll have everything you could imagine.
Yeah.
Onto my website, because this one professor, particularly,
mm-hmm.
he's really into getting this thing down to the nitty gritty.
Great. So you've got how many? So there's a lot of people out there right now looking into these metals.
I'd say at least a dozen.
Well, that's great. That's great news. So hopefully they'll be able to figure out more, because it certainly sounds like a mystery if it's some sort of unknown configuration.
Well, we know for a fact that it came off of a UFO because I've talked to the Mr. Anderson that stood under it,
mm-hmm.
and we know that it was there. So now we just got to prove what we already know.
Mm-hmm. So you also...
And I think we can prove a fact. You can't prove a negative.
Yeah. So we'll have people checking out your website to keep updated on that, and I'll definitely be checking in with you, of course, so we keep in contact, luckily. But you also said you do a lot of keeping an eye on, and I don't know if you do this sort of work yourself, on alternate energies?
I've been interested in alternative energy for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And mainly my whole concern is to find how a UFO propulsion system works.
Okay.
And I've already told some of the things I know about it, but over time I'm going to put in a lot of information on my site about alternative energy. And then I also mentioned to start off with, I saw two things this year that is just phenomenal
mm-hmm.
on alternative energy.
Wow.
And August I went to the Extraordinary Technology Symposium in Albuquerque, put on by the Tesla Tech Society. And I saw Mr. Paul Pantone talk about, and the acronym is GEET, G-E-E-T, and that stands for the Global Economic Energy Technology, which just words. But what this thing does is, it takes like a, we'll just start off with the gasoline because you know what that is. So there's gasoline, then you get fumes out of gasoline, and this gasoline will go through a very restricted area that has a magnet in it, and that whole little system right there, one moving piece, will change that gasoline fume to a plasma. And then that plasma will go into a cylinder of a vehicle, and a plasma is only can be made in a vacuum. So the cylinder, whenever it goes down, it will draw in this plasma. As soon as it starts up, that plasma implodes versus explodes, and it pulls the cylinder up versus pushing it down.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, that is absolutely phenomenal.
I've seen
and
that.
This thing right here, I just spoke of with gasoline, it will do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Soy sauce or ketchup or water or anything you want to put in there.
Have you tried it yourself?
We've got one made. We don't have it started.
Mm-hmm.
We had a pull cord on it. It's a 3-horsepower Briggs & Stratton engine, but we're putting a electric start on it. So, and we've not worked on it very much. We've only started it a few weeks ago in winter and all that, and we're working in a garage that's no heat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been cold. But I'd say within another mm-hmm. week or two, we'll have that thing going.
No,
and then
great.
We can start really experimenting with it.
Yeah, I looked at the website.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I watched his, I think it was you who gave it to me, some material of his that I looked at. But I saw that. That's really interesting stuff.
And also, within the last month or two, precisely, October the 24th, the day of my UFO film festival, Cara Faye brought to me a DVD of a Mr. John Searle. And John Searle has made an SEG, which stands for a Searle Energy Generator. And this thing is phenomenal. This generator is made out of magnets and other things. It's in a circle, like pipe ends. This magnets in a circle is a self-starting generator that runs, and it'll match the energy needs up to a considerable amount of energy. This thing needs to be looked at drastically.
Mm-hmm.
It's phenomenal. And Mr. Searle discovered this about 50 years ago. He's in his 80s now, and they're making a DVD of his life story about the Searle energy generators. And I could hardly wait to know more about it. And we're looking for people at laboratories that would like to take the SET.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Searle will supply plans and specifications to have this thing replicated. He tried to give it to the government in the 50s, wouldn't have it. And then mm-hmm. in the 70s, they made 70-some generators that actually become levitators.
Mm-hmm.
They actually will lift a body off the ground.
Wow.
And they did that about 70 different times. He's got pictures of it levitating. So I'm saying that John Searle is the next major thing that's going to be breakthrough on alternative energy.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot about him and his technology lately.
Yeah, and we're going to hear hopefully more and more, especially if people will replicate it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need is replicators.
So tell me a little bit also about this film festival that you do.
In 04, that was a year that we went down to and dug up those pieces of metal from the UFO crash on the plane to San Augustine. Whenever I came back, I was talking to one of our newspaper people here, and he said, we need to show that to people.
Mm-hmm.
So in the conversation, we decided we had to have a UFO film festival and have a speaker. And that first year, I would speak about the metal that we had. And that worked out so well that we've had our sixth or seventh one last month.
October. That's great. And about what kind of films do you show?
Okay, this year, very specifically, we had the crop circle film, What on Earth Inside the Crop Circle Mystery by Suzanne Taylor.
I haven't seen that one yet.
It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I've heard
some
great
things. She did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
And she won the EBE award at the International UFO Congress
mm-hmm.
this last year. And rightly so, it's great. And then we had The Greatest Story Ever Denied by Jose Escamilla,
mm-hmm.
which was great. And then we showed Paul Davies Roswell, the UFO cover-up.
Yeah, that's great.
And that's the best one I've got.
That's
about 18 years old or so with Martin Sheen and the group. And that is really a well-done
Yeah, I love
movie.
That one.
And we have had an offer, and we'll probably show it next year, of a group from France that has made a Roswell documentary. But they couldn't get it translated into English this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty sure we'll have it next year. And then I'm looking for two other documentaries. One of them will need to be a crop circle, and then one just whatever is absolutely good for the public. And the town of Gallup has really supported me on this effort.
That's great. Do people come from outside of Gallup as well?
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Where is Gerald Anderson now living?
He lives in the state of Missouri.
Okay.
Doing really well up there, and it was just a delight to host him here in Gallup.
Yeah. Well, that sounds great, that film festival. Is there a website for that as well?
It'll be on my regular site.
Okay.
Now, as far as I know, I'll just have the one site, but Cara Faye is my webmaster. No, web designer.
Mm-hmm.
And also now, at the moment, a webmaster. But she's got it where you just push a button and you go to all these different events, and then they have an index, and she's done just a great job. And this coming year, I think it's going to be a well worth destination for folks.
Great.
Like our geek,
mm-hmm.
I've made it such and I'm taking pictures, so people will have close-ups of these different parts and pieces, which aren't many, but they can go into. We have made a lot of errors because we had almost nothing to go on.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take all the errors that we made and take them out for the other folks. Well, they won't make them again.
Yeah, it seems like
people will really enjoy it.
Yeah, some experienced machinists. Can figure that out. Unfortunately, that doesn't include me, so I'd need some help building something like that as well. But it looks really interesting and not too difficult to make if you are experienced with that.
Actually, it's extremely simple. And mm-hmm. the fellow, my partner, Bill, is a master machinist. He's retired, but he also, over the years, collected him commercial machine shop for his garage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just beautiful to watch him work.
Well, that's great. That's the type of guy you need.
So I feel confident that if anybody out there wants to build one of these things, Bill and I can help them with the parts and pieces they might need.
Mm-hmm. So will you be...
Why don't I give my email address here, please?
Okay, go for it.
It's wade_eftv@yahoo.com. I'll repeat. wade_eftv@yahoo.com. And the EFTV is energy from the vacuum. That's where all energy is stored. And one of these days I'll have one of Dr. Bearden's papers telling the difference between energy from the vacuum and zero-point energy.
Mm-hmm.
They are absolutely two different animals.
Really?
And why people are studying the zero-point energy, folks, is it don't work.
Mm.
It's totally bogus. That's the energy, the zero-point energy is a vibration down at as far as you can go, down to absolute zero. There's still a vibration. How can you get anything useful out of something that's down there so far?
Mm-hmm.
You can't. The energy from the vacuum is where it's at.
What's the difference there? What's the energy from the vacuum?
That's the energy that's from between you and I and you and the speaker. It's throughout the universe. There are these particles of energy that you can't see, you can't measure. They're basically not there, but they are there.
Hmm.
And the only way you can get that energy out of the vacuum is through a magnet. And I encourage people to get the book, The Secret World of Magnets, by Howard Johnson, first edition, 1970, reprinted in 2006.
Okay.
It shows how a magnet works. What these teachers are showing our students of how a magnet works, in fact, you probably have seen it yourself, Alejandro, they have a magnet with a top with a positive and a negative on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
They show an energy going out the top and coming in the bottom. Well, that's one stream of energy. That's one line of force. There are over 200 lines of forces coming out of that magnet. They've actually studied about 100 of them, of these lines, and they've got names for about 50.
Wow.
Can you imagine? I can't even imagine what's over there on that other 100.
The secret
and
life of magnets.
Part of that 100 is the propulsion system of a UFO.
Great. Well, thanks for that information. I'm going to go check out that book myself, but we're pretty much out of time. So are you going to be going to some conferences? Are you going to be going to the UFO Congress this year?
Definitely, yes. I've already sent in my money and all that. And
great.
Looking
well,
forward to it.
We'll see you there.
Wonderful.
Check that out at ufocongress.com. And then how about Roswell? Are you going to be out there this summer?
Yes, definitely. Yeah,
cool.
We send most of them, but not all.
Well, I plan to be there, too. So
I think we were together 2 years ago.
Yeah, yep.
There in Roswell, and there we were looking at that magnetic rock.
Yeah, exactly. That was really cool stuff,
circle.
Too. That was really interesting. The Roswell Rock Circle.
Yeah, it's just beautiful.
Well, thank you for being on the show. A lot of great information. I was glad because, I haven't gotten into the details of all of this with you, so it's great to be able to have some of that. So I can sort of sort this out in my mind. Really excited about the further analysis on those metals as well.
And thank you, and share this rest with the rest of the Open Mind folks.
Yep, definitely. They're listening right now.
I appreciate that.
All right.
So I want to wish you and all the audience a wonderful Happy New Year.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, and I'll talk to you soon.
Until next time, thank you.
All right, remember that we will be changing the time for the show Fridays at noon Arizona time, and we're going to be in the KFNX studio. But don't worry if you forget and you join us next Thursday, we're going to have a show then too. So we'll have two shows next week, double your pleasure. It's going to be a good week. It's going to be a fabulous new year, better than 2009. So if you had a great 2009, you're going to have an awesome 2010. Thank you for joining us on the show. Remember to check out openminds.tv for some of those cool stories that I talked about earlier. But you all have a safe I'll say that again. Safe New Year's Eve. Talk to you later.